This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We continue our interviews with candidates in this summer's primary, and today we hear from two men who face each other in August. Coming up, Jim Bussler tells us why he's running for Congress, but first we hear from the man he is trying to unseat. Republican Fred Upton has served at Southwest Michigan in the U.S. House since he was first elected in 1986. Upton is seeking another two-year term representing Michigan's 6th Congressional District. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks.
We're also joined by Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Gordon.
Before we get to questions, let me just have you briefly, if you would, tell us what you would do with another 2 years in the House.
Well, we have a lot on our agenda. I don't know if I can be brief or not, but very quickly, I would look to continue to chair the Energy and Commerce Committee. We have jurisdiction over energy, environment, health care, commerce, manufacturing, trade, telecommunications, and, of course, oversight. And we've got a lot of things that we're working on now that certainly carry into next year. On the telecommunications front, we're looking to update the Communications Act from 18 years ago. A lot of changes, internet, wireless, a whole number of different things. Also, one of the things that we unveiled this last month, of course, is our 21st Century Cures, a way that we can faster develop and promote safe drugs and devices, working with our disease groups, Alzheimer's, diabetes, cancer, et cetera, along with our university researchers, pharma, device manufacturers, as well as obviously the FDA, as well as the National Institutes of Health, to try and help us figure out a way to solve these diseases. And, you know, our focus is jobs and the economy, and we'll continue to do that. And should I be reelected? Most pundits do think that the Republicans will pick up seats in both the House and the Senate, be in a very good position to look out for our district on things that we certainly all care about. And I'm in a pretty good position chairing the oldest committee with arguably the most jurisdiction in the House.
Yvonne?
On Friday, the Veterans Affairs Secretary, Shinseski, resigned. And I know you said that it was needed accountability in order to fix a broken VA system. Obviously, his resignation alone is not going to solve these problems. What do you think some important next steps are?
Here's what's troubling. Our office, we've got two offices here in Michigan. Our veterans, whether they're just coming back now from Afghanistan or they've been, you know, they've served in Vietnam, Korea, et cetera, there's a promise that's there on health care. And particularly the last number of months, so there have been lengthy delays for many of our veterans to even get appointments at a variety of facilities. This morning I learned about a man who needs a whole knee. I mean, it is gone. And I think that I was told that he checked in with the VA and they told him to come in about 6 weeks from now. We're helping him. You know, I think he's going to get in this week. We're hearing these stories quite a bit. And what was troubling was that the VA, particularly right at the top, was indicating that they weren't aware of some of those stories. We had a cover-up that led to perhaps, you know, dozens dying, maybe as many as 40, maybe even more, particularly out in Arizona. That's pretty bad. And for the VA not to recognize this, and we've given them the money, I mean, the budget is requested by the president. We've passed that. It's had overwhelming support, bipartisan support, to make sure that the dollars are there. And I think it now begs the question, and goes back to something I've been saying for some time. And I heard again last week there was a major veterans event over in Mattawan a couple weeks ago, that it's a senior/veteran event. And I want to say it was there that somebody came up and they were aware of someone that was trying to travel to a VA clinic. And I want to say it was Ann Arbor, but from Traverse City. And they traveled all across the state and they found out that the appointment was canceled and had to travel all the way back. What is wrong with telling veterans wherever they are that you have a choice of where you want to get your treatment? So maybe you don't live where a VA hospital or a provider or a clinic is. If you live in Kalamazoo, and I know Battle Creek's pretty close, but if you live here, I mean, why not be able to go to Bronson or Borges or Battle Creek or Ann Arbor. But let people go see the provider of their choice, perhaps in the community where they live now, versus traveling perhaps as many as hundreds of miles, a round trip back and forth. Let's give our vets a voucher so that they can get quality care where they live. We also know that there's a shortage of doctors at a number of these facilities as well. So, again, we need to take care of our vets. We need to keep our promises. And it's more than just General Shinseki, who clearly was the top guy. I said heads needed to roll. He was, you know, I would like to think that he was aware of it for a long time, and really not a lot happened on his watch.
I'm going to use this opportunity to pivot into another issue, because there were a number of people who noted an irony here, which is that the VA has a lot of people demanding their service now because we've had two wars ongoing for over a decade. And it was Eric Shinseki, then as a general, who warned that we needed much more resources and many more troops than the Bush administration planned on to go into Iraq. And he was really not listened to. His advice was not heeded. So I want to use this opportunity to ask you, if we are in a situation, again, where this president, or perhaps a future president, if you're still in the House, is asking for the authorization to use force, are there some lessons from that pre-Iraq war period and what General Shinseki said at the time that should be applied if Congress is being asked to send troops overseas again?
Well, you'll remember, and so this is dating back in the early 90s with the first Iraq war, that there were a number of very classified briefings. I remember well President Bush, this is Bush 41, not 43, Bush 41, not really wanting to go to the Congress to seek the authorization. I was among those that in some small meetings with him convinced him that that was what he should do. He should come to the Congress and seek our support, and he did. He chose that. He made that decision. And there were a whole number of classified briefings about allegedly what we knew, what we didn't. And there was a bipartisan proposal. Hillary Clinton voted to authorize troops to go into Iraq, and it prevailed.
This is 2002 going into Iraq under George W. Bush, who was then president. Because Hillary Clinton would not have been in the Senate when George H.W. Bush.
But the decision was made. Hillary Clinton voted yes, as did I, based on the evidence that we saw. As it turned out, some of that evidence was wrong, and came out.
So I guess going back, the question is:
Congress needs to be involved in these decisions when you authorize war. That's one of the reasons why you'll remember this last year. Again, it was President Obama who wanted to, at least press reports. Talked about him using force to go into Syria. Again, I think that it was important that he come to the Congress. At the end of the day, they realized that they did not have the votes, that they had not made the case before the Congress in a bipartisan way, and he stepped down, chose not to do that.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton, and also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
Last week, your likely Democratic opponents in November accused you of no longer being a moderate. How do you respond to that?
Well, you get a thick skin when you run for office. That's one change that I've had. But I've had a primary Republican primary the last couple of times. I saw them over this weekend, and they always charge me with being too far to the left, and I've always had a general opponent, and they've always charged me with being too far to the right. So, of course, when you run a campaign, of course, it's sort of the MO for the opposition. They're going to do that, and he's operating under the same playbook. How would I respond to that? Well, a couple things. I was one of a minority in the House that voted to end the fiscal cliff crisis. I would say that maybe the easy vote was no, but the right vote for me, I thought, was yes, and I voted that way. I was one of, again, a minority of Republicans that voted to end the shutdown last year, one of 86. I was one that supported the two-year bipartisan budget plan, the Ryan Murray plan in December. I voted for the Farm Bill when it failed. Last year, and I voted for the Farm Bill when it passed. And my Republican opponent criticizes me for voting for the Farm Bill, period. Would have tripled milk prices, would have done a whole number of bad things. Debbie Stabenow did a good job in chairing that bill through the conference committee, and we were able to get disaster relief now for our fruit folks, particularly on cherries. It's a new program, and that was embodied in this new bill. And I've been targeted, frankly, by the hard right in each of the last two elections because they have thought that I'm too far to the left. And so I guess it's the normal MO for the Democrat then to say something else. But in fact, my votes, I think, reflect the majority of where our district is, which is why I've done pretty well in the elections all these different cycles.
Let me try to take you out of this equation as much as we can, because you're hardly the only Republican congressman who's been targeted by more conservative elements within the party. And what many political commentators have said is that whether or not the Tea Party, as they are, if you want to call it that, part of the party, wins these elections in primaries, it may not matter a whole lot because they're moving the party to the right. Do you see the Republican Party as more conservative than it was, say, when you started in Congress in the mid-'80s?
The big difference between now and the mid-'80s is that when I was first elected, I got to say, and I remember I had worked for President Reagan before I ran for office, I never thought ever that the Republicans would be in the majority because, frankly, for almost my entire lifetime, we were in the minority. In fact, we were well under, I think, the number of years we didn't even have 150 votes in the House out of 435. I think there were a couple of years we were in the 140s. And now, you know, we have a slim majority. Speaker Pelosi had an 86-vote margin. Speaker Boehner now, it's about a 30-vote margin or so. We have 233 Republicans. 218 is the magic mark in terms of being in the majority or not. And, you know, for me, my focus has always been getting things done. Virtually almost every bill that we've moved through our committee has had Democratic support. And we've had, you know, a lot of bills. We've actually been able to pass on a voice vote on a host of things, working with Republicans and Democrats to get it done. And, you know, has the Republican Party itself moved to the right? Well, you know, we're in charge, whereas in the past we never were. But, you know, now you have to govern. And I've been part of that governing majority. And, you know, my MO has always been to try and get things done and work with both sides. I've been able to do that.
More than a few times sitting in the very chair you're in now, you have used the phrase governing Republican to refer to yourself and some other members of Congress.
Thanks for reminding me. That's what I am.
But that indicates that there's a different type of Republican.
Well, let's face it. We have a number of Republicans, not certainly a majority, but probably, I think, a few dozen. It is easy to vote no. You can always find something wrong probably in every bill out there. And we have a number of folks on our side who do vote no on virtually every issue, whether it's veterans, whether it's prosthetic research, I mean, finding the artificial limbs for our soldiers coming back from Afghanistan. You know, you name an issue. I mean, I don't know that we could get apple pie, you know, as being an American dessert being passed with some of the folks that are there. It's just, you know, hey, we've to govern. You've got to pass appropriation bills. We've got to do a lot of things that have to happen. And when you have a small majority, and that's what's, you know, our leadership is right now, very small. You lose only 15 people, and a vote will go down if you're not reached out, particularly to the other side. Bad things happen. As we look at a couple of issues coming up, immigration reform is a huge issue. The easy vote, I guess, for folks is to vote no. But the right vote is we got to figure this out. It is a broken system for a lot of people, a lot of employers. And to sit on our hands and do nothing is not the right approach that we ought to take. So we have a number of folks, a number of my colleagues, and yeah, they'd like to vote no. But it's with tough choices, you got to make a decision. And the best thing is to try and work with folks to try and get it done and get it fixed.
Congressman Fred Upton, as always, thank you for your time.
Congressman Fred Upton is running for re-election in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. He has represented Southwest Michigan in the U.S. House since he was first elected in 1986.
And we also want to thank Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much, Gordon.